Fantastic. So, well, I would like to start by thanking the organizer and my colleagues in physics for letting me take in part of this beautiful experience. It's unfortunate I cannot see all of you in person, but we are trying to do our best. So what I will describe today is an attempt to construct a theory that describes all fundamental particles and all their interactions. Now, this is probably the most ambitious conceptual enterprise ever attempted by humankind. And it could well be that it is far from what we can do. And we are like maybe a group of dogs trying to understand the rules of chess. So it seems quite hopeless. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. And even if we don't achieve that, it could be that we learn a lot of things on the way. And that's what physicists should do. Now, as we will see, this will lead to a field theoretically inspired solution to the problem of quantum gravity. And also, it will lead to very surprising consequences. So if we want to answer this question here, the first thing we need to understand is what are the fundamental blocks of matter. And in order to do that, we need to look at the atom. And here I drew the classic picture of the atom, which is an electron orbiting around a nucleus formed by a neutron and a proton. Now, it turns out that if you try to split the electron into more fundamental particles, you cannot do that. So the electron, as it is fundamental. So we believe it is fundamental. And that is one of the fundamental particles in the universe. On the other hand, the proton and the neutron are not fundamental. And if you split them, you see that inside them, there are more elementary particles that are called quarks. The neutron has two down quarks and one up, and this has two up quarks and one down. And these quarks are the fundamental particles. So the complete picture is that actually the electron is part of a family of fundamental particles, which are called leptons. We have the electron, neutrino, and other particles similar to the electron and the neutrino. And also the quarks, the two quarks that we saw before, are part of a family of quarks, U, C, T, D, S, and B. Now, all these particles that I have listed here, and also their antiparticles, they form all the matter of the universe, all the tangible matter, like the table, the computer, etc. And they are called fermions. So the particles that form the tangible matter in the universe, these are called fermions. Now, in our modern view of particle physics, it turns out that also the fundamental forces, gravity, electromagnetism, etc., are mediated by particles. They are not tangible. You can put a lot of light in a room and you know, you have no obstacle in doing that. And the fundamental particles that are responsible for the forces, these are called bosons. And here there is a picture of the fundamental forces that we know so far. So we have gravity, which is of course responsible for the formation of black holes or for the Earth orbiting around the sun. And this is mediated by the graviton, by a particle called the graviton. Then we also have electromagnetism, which we have seen in the previous talk, and that is mediated by the photon. These two are the most well-known forces. And then there are two other forces that are a little bit less known. So one is called the nuclear strong force, and it is the force that keeps together the three quarks inside the protons or neutrons. And then we have another force which is called the nuclear weak force, and it is responsible for like nuclear reactions, etc. And for instance, it is it makes possible for this D quark to jump into a U quark. Now, if you look at these four forces, there is a mathematical reason of why gravity is very different to the other three forces. However, luckily, if you look at the atom and at the scales that are like the atomic scale, at the atomic level, we can completely forget about gravity. And for instance, if you compare the orders of magnitude of the gravitational force and the weak force, this nuclear weak force, the nuclear weak force is 10 to the 36 times bigger. So it is huge compared to the gravitational force. And the nice thing is that if we forget about gravity, right, we will say that we will completely forget about gravity, then all the fundamental particles and their interactions are very well described by what we call a quantum field theory. And we have more or less seen what a quantum field theory is in the previous talk. So a quantum field theory is a framework that describes how particles interact with each other in a way which is consistent with quantum mechanics and special relativity, okay? And for instance, QED is a simple example, the simplest example of a quantum field theory. And in a quantum field theory, the way to deal with particles, etc., is that each particle, and here by particle, I mean both fermions or bosons, are represented by a field. So here photons, the particle of electromagnetism, is represented by F mu nu, as we have seen in the previous talk, and also electrons, etc., are represented by another field. And the statement is that this quantum field theory tells you that the interactions between these particles, fermions or bosons, are detected by a Lagrangian for those fields. And here, I have written for you in an extremely compact way the standard, the Lagrangian for the standard model of elementary particles. This little bit looks very much like the QED Lagrangian, but this is a big generalization of the QED Lagrangian, where actually the fields are not just functions, but are matrices, okay? So this is the complication of this standard model and QCD, which is part of it. And one way to interpret what a Lagrangian is telling us is that the Lagrangian gives you a set of basic rules and tells you what are the probabilities for basic processes to happen. So this Lagrangian, for instance, is telling us that an electron can emit one of these set bosons, and then it can become a positron. And this Lagrangian tells you what is the probability for that thing to happen. And actually, as we have seen in the previous lecture, this Lagrangian predicts really with huge accuracy what happens at accelerators. And this Lagrangian, the standard model to work, needed an extra boson, which was called the Higgs boson, and this was exactly found at accelerators. So this was probably the biggest triumph of theoretical physics of the last decades. So we really have a very nice model that describes all these particles, all these elementary particles, and how they interact with these three forces if we forget about gravity, okay? So this is very nice. Now, however, here we see that we have some kind of conceptual problem. So we may be happy that we can make measurements. The standard model is renormalizable, so we can make predictions. We can go measure these predictions at accelerators, and we are extremely happy. However, we know that the standard model cannot exist by itself. And a very simple reason why this cannot, the standard model cannot be the whole story, is because the particles of the standard model, they do couple to gravity, okay? If you have a lot of electrons, they will make a gravitational field, and electrons feel the force of Earth as well. And it turns out that although you can forget about gravity at length scale of the atom, actually, at some point, gravity will become important and the standard model will break down. And in terms of energy, basically, we have calculated the energy scale at which this happens. And basically, this is a calculation which is dimensional analysis. So there is a unique combination that involves quantum mechanics through H-bar, relativity through the speed of light, and gravity through the Newton constant, that gives you an energy. And when you translate this energy in distances, this becomes this distance, this Planck length, which is about 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, so that we expect that the standard model at these distances break down. Because at these distances, we cannot disregard gravity anymore. And again, let me repeat the same. So although gravity at large scales is well described by Einstein's theory of general relativity, this fails at very small scales. And if we try to construct a quantum field theory for gravitons, we actually run into infinities, as mentioned in the previous talk. And again, as we have just seen, I wrote down some of these integrals that were computed by Velmont some time ago. So you can consider, for instance, the scattering of gravitons in general relativity. And the problem with gravitons is that gravitons are point-like particles in the usual approach to general relativity, and they can get too close to each other. And if you compute processes like the scattering of gravitons, then these you are led to integrals that are divergent. Now, this integral is not really a problem, but the integrals that you get to two loops are actually a problem. An important note is that we do have these infinities in the standard model too, but those we can cure because the theory is renormalizable. The problem with gravity is that you cannot cure these infinities. So the infinities that come from the fact that gravitons are point-like are much worse in the case of general relativity. So we need a different approach to the problem. And the approach of a string theory is to try to step back and try to answer the question of what is the form of the elementary particles. Are they points that have like zero dimensions, or are they something else? And in a string theory, we propose that there is a scale, a natural scale, because fundamental particles, they are not really points, but they are like very little, really tiny strings. And then let's say that you take this as a fact. So you say the particles are little strings. Then what you have to do, you have to sit down and you have to construct a relativistic theory of strings as opposed to point particles, which is consistent with quantum mechanics. So it's a theory of strings consistent with general relativity and with quantum mechanics. And actually, it turns out after 20, 30 years, you find out that you don't have much of a choice. The theory is pretty unique, and there are a few ingredients that you need to have. So you will always have open strings that are strings that start and end in two different points. You have closed strings like this, and then you have some objects which are called D-brains at which strings can start, can end, as shown in the picture. And this is a usual model of strings where you have different of these D-brains, the places where strings can start and open and end, sorry. And you have strings that can go between one brain and another one, strings that can go between the same brain as here, and also closed strings. And the beautiful thing is that if you study the properties of these strings, these strings have exactly the correct properties of the fundamental particles that form matter, leptons and quarks, while these strings give you the gauge bosons and closed strings give you the graviton. So that we have a framework that unifies all particles and forces. In addition, there will be higher excitations of these strings. So this will be higher and extra degrees of freedoms that come with the string theory. Now, there is another reason also, which is very easy to see with a picture, of why in string theory we don't have infinities anymore. So imagine that you consider the scattering of two gravitons, if they are just in like a general approach, a standard approach to quantum gravity. Here you have two gravitons, and you see that two gravitons collide into give one graviton, time runs from left to right. And here, in usual approach to quantum gravity, the gravitons can get really close to each other. So here you see this point is something really sharp. However, in string theory, gravitons are these open strings and And as they move on time, we have these tubes and we have two tubes joining into a third tube. And this interaction is something much softer than a point particle interaction. And because of that, string theory is free from the infinities that you get in quantum gravity. Of course, not everything is beautiful in string theory. And string theory comes with several other features that I will describe in the second part of the talk. So the first feature is that it predicts supersymmetry. This is a remarkable, really surprising symmetry between fermions and bosons. So actually, string theory does suggest that there is a symmetry between the particles of matter and the particles of interactions, which is extremely surprising. It also predicts the total number of dimensions of space-time. And I think no other physical theory does this in such a clean way. The third point, which is a bit bad, is that it is extremely hard to make computations with, and I will try to explain why. And it has probably the richest physical and mathematical structure among any theory invented by humankind. And this could be a good thing or a bad thing, depending on your taste. So for the remaining 12 minutes of this talk, I will try to give a glimpse of these three aspects of a string theory. So the first one is the number of dimensions. And there is actually a very cute and a small computation that tells you how to compute the number of dimensions in a string theory. So the first question we can ask is, what is the mass of the graviton in a string theory? So we have this closed string that represents the graviton, and we can ask what is the mass in a string theory. And actually, okay, we would need a few string theory lessons to do that, but the end of the computation is something very simple, and it's just given by a bunch of harmonic oscillators, which you all have met in quantum mechanics. And the total formula for the mass of the graviton is d minus 2 times this sum, which looks very much like the energy of the harmonic oscillators, minus 2. And here, so here in this formula, we have the input of quantum mechanics. This is basically a quantum mechanics computation. But then we have this funny sum here, which is 1 minus 2 plus 3 minus 4, etc., which is obviously divergent. But this can be done in a rigorous way if we introduce a regulator epsilon and then take this epsilon to zero. So each term of this sum, we multiply it by e to the minus epsilon n. And of course, for any positive epsilon, this is exponentially dumped, so this sum is convergent. And then you do the sum, and at the end, you take the limit of epsilon going to zero. And that gives you this very beautiful one quarter. And if we take this, the fact that this sum is equal to one quarter, into the mass formula for the graviton, for the string, a stringy graviton, we get this nice end result for the mass of the graviton in a string theory. However, general relativity implies that the graviton must be massless. And this was one of the questions with the photon a few minutes ago. Because gravity is also a really long range force, and gravitons move at the speed of light, they have to be massless. And this m squared is equal to zero can only work if d is equal to 10. So a string theory is consistent with quantum mechanics and general relativity only in 10 dimensions. And this is a funny thing, because if you go to IKEA and buy a piece of furniture, they will give you 3 dimensions for the furniture. So we actually expected 4 dimensions, length, width, and height, plus time. And we are finding 10. So a very natural question is, if a string theory predicts 10 dimensions, why do we see only 4? And the answer is that not all of them have to be large. And we can think of a garden hose pipe. And if we look at a hose pipe from really far away, it will look like a one-dimensional object, right? Like a one-dimensional line, basically, if you look at a hose pipe from 20 meters. However, if you get close to it, you will see that there is a long dimension, a large dimension, which is similar to R, to the real line, times a compact dimension that goes around the surf, the pipe itself. So a two-dimensional hose pipe has a large dimension and a compact dimension, which is basically a circle. And the idea with the string theory is very much the same. Out of these 10 dimensions, 4 dimensions can be very large, and they have to be very large, basically 3 plus 1 Minkowski spacetime. But then the other 6 dimensions are curled up in a 6-dimensional compact manifold. And one of the hard features of a string theory is that actually there are bazillion ways to curl up 6 dimensions. And the predictions for the theory of what happens in these 4 dimensions depend very much on how you curl up these 6 dimensions here. And just to give you some flavor for the kind of things that is important, So here we have this correspondence that the shape of this six-dimensional manifold is in one-to-one correspondence with how particles interact in four dimensions. And for instance, some of these interactions are proportional to something very mathematical as the number of straight lines that you can fit in these manifolds, or some specific contour integrals that you can do in the cycles of these manifolds. So these are very hard, complicated mathematical questions to answer. But then, okay, we have this relation here, and we are saying that different manifolds give you different physics in four dimensions, different predictions of a string theory for what should happen in the real world, so to say. So we can ask, is there a way of wrapping the six extra dimensions such that in four dimensions, things, the theory looks exactly like the standard model? And the answer is actually extremely hard, and it is impossible to get models that in four dimensions look exactly like the standard model, but it is too easy to get similar models. And an important problem here is that while one-dimensional compact manifolds and two-dimensional compact manifolds are a piece of cake, six-dimensional manifolds are extremely rich and hard to study. And the necessary mathematics hasn't been developed yet. Not even for four dimensions it has been developed yet. So we may be centuries ago away from the math necessary to understand six-dimensional manifolds. But still, we have learned a lot from this perspective. So this perspective between physics in four dimensions and geometry in higher dimensions has led to a lot of beautiful results in physics. But I won't have much time to go through this, but you can ask me questions, etc. So now, let me end up, so the last 3 minutes, with a few comments about string theory. So the first comment is about predictability in string theory. Now, one of the dreams of string theory was that if we did a theory of strings which was consistent with quantum mechanics and general relativity, this theory would be unique. And actually, this dream is basically true, with a caveat that I will mention in a bit. But the theory is almost unique, except for a discrete choice. So there are five different types of string theories, but they are believed, there are dualities between them, and they are believed to be different corners of a single 11-dimensional theory, which is called M-theory, which is even more complicated than a string theory, but there is a sort of uniqueness of a string theory. However, the problem is that there are many, many, many classical solutions with the spaces of the form, a flat Minkowski spacetime like here, times a six-dimensional manifold. Because there are many six-dimensional manifolds that are consistent with the equations of motion of a string theory. And the metric is actually, the geometry is actually one of the fields of a string theory, but we have many others, and there is an abundance of vacua. So basically the situation that we have here is that you have only one set of equations, but we have many solutions to those equations. And the universe may have chosen in principle any of these solutions. And a rough estimate of how many solutions are there gives you 10 to the 500. And I think it is fair to say that this is just too big of a number, but I think my personal opinion is that this is because we don't really understand string theory properly well. So we really need to understand whether there are further constraints. So let me tell that, let me now start my conclusions, saying that string theory has achieved many things. So, of course, I just spoke for like 30 minutes, but it unifies all known fundamental particles and forces under one framework, as we have seen. It cures the divergence problems of gravity, and it is a complicated theory, but it is a quantum theory of gravity, which is consistent. And there are many other achievements that I didn't have time to explain. It has also problems. For instance, it kind of predicts supersymmetry that has not yet been observed in nature. It predicts extra dimensions, an abundance of vacua, and also the mathematics that we need has not been developed yet. And the important question, of course, is whether a string theory is really true or not. And while at LHC, we will certainly not be able to prove theory, the string theory, it could be that LHC may provide some evidence for the ideas that feature in a string theory, for instance, supersymmetry. And, you know, the math is incredibly hard, and this enterprise may take hundreds of years, but if we succeed, we would have found the final theory, which is a theory that unifies all fundamental particles and forces under one framework, and all the laws of nature must follow from it. And this will give a new conception of space-time. We could understand things like the quantum mechanics of black holes or the origin of the universe, all oldest and deepest scientific questions, and probably applications that we can even imagine. Thank you very much.